Vaping, its popularity, and its link to COVID complications. Even though rates of teen vaping dipped in 2020, public health experts say it is still at an epidemic level, and new research is emerging about its dangers. One study out of Stanford shows that teens and young adults who vape are at much higher risk of COVID-19. Another study out of UC San Diego shows that teenagers who use e-cigarettes are 3 times more likely to become daily smokers. Meantime, the vaping industry promotes e-cigarettes as a method of quitting smoking. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the latest research and learn about some of the legislation making its way through different levels of government. Vaping on Maine Calling next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The use of e-cigarettes raises health concerns, especially among the young. Today, we will learn about vaping during the pandemic and efforts to stop marketing vape products to young people. My guest, Lance Bushy with the American Lung Association. We're hoping that he will call in soon. David P.A., Communications and Policy Manager for the Tobacco and Substance Use Prevention and Control Program at the Maine CDC, and Dr. Colby Wyatt, pediatric pulmonologist with Maine Health. We invite your comments. We invite your questions about vaping. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. David, I'm going to start with you, and I'm going to ask for those of our listeners who are not familiar with what a vaping device looks like, or an e-cigarette is, can you briefly describe it and then talk about what you are seeing in Maine? What kind of trends are there around these products?
Well, there are a lot of different products out there when it comes to vaping products, but they all kind of react in the same way by creating an aerosol by heating when you breathe in, and a lot of them look like a USB drive that you might stick in a computer, but there's also some that look a little bit more like a cigarette product. So it varies quite a bit. And as far as what we're seeing with the data, the use, there was a big jump in use between 2017 and 2019, which raised a lot of concern. And there's a little bit less certainty of what's happened since then due to the data collection happening in 2021, which will happen in the fall.
But generally speaking, are they commonplace in Maine? Are you going to see a vaping device if you know what to look for, if you're out and about in a place where there are young people?
Yeah. So they're much more common with young folks, with teens and young adults. The adult population, it's only about a little less than 5% with the latest data that tend to be using them. But when we were looking at high school students with the 2019 data, it was closer to 30% of folks that were using it at that time. So it is something that has been pretty common, particularly with the younger group of teens and young adults, and not quite as common with adults.
All right. And I want to turn to you, Dr. Colby Wyatt, and ask you about what kind of trends you're seeing among your patients. Do you see many patients who are using e-cigarettes or vaping devices?
Yes. Among our teenage patients, especially, we actually changed the script of how we were talking to kids about substance use over the course of 2018, 2019, because we started seeing the prevalence of the vaping going up. It's prevalent. A lot of them are using it. Unlike cigarettes, they're a little easier to hide because they don't carry the same odor with them. They were common enough that local schools were starting to change their policies about how you go to the bathroom and how kids are allowed to congregate. But
tell us how it affects a young person's lungs.
What we were seeing for the majority of the side effects we were seeing were effects on their control of asthma. So we'd have kids who had asthma under control, and then they were having difficulty with their asthma control. And when we got down to what their new exposures were, they were vaping. They had started vaping. And so that required us to try to help them to modify their behavior and to stop vaping, but also some of them needed higher doses of medication to help control their symptoms.
Mm. And is it difficult for them to quit?
Yes. I mean, nicotine's supremely addictive. And the amount of nicotine you can get from a vape pen or a vape device is different than the nicotine you get from a cigarette. So the teenage brain is more prone to addiction than the adult brain. And the nicotine that's getting delivered, especially the nicotine salts that are delivered by specific vape devices, has a faster hit to the brain and can lead to more addiction.
David P.A., why are these devices so attractive to young people?
I think some of the, with the numbers being pretty high on use, just seeing other youth and friends that might use it is one thing. I think, early on, and there still are some flavor options that are there with these products that might not be with other tobacco products. So there's a lot of, early on too, there was a lot less awareness of there actually being nicotine in the products. So a lot of youth were using them thinking they were just basically had flavor in them and didn't realize there was nicotine. So then once they start using it, they become addicted and continue using it. And, some of them would use it with friends. So it became a social thing as well and became hard for folks to quit.
I want to ask you, Dr. Wyatt, about COVID-19. I saw a study out of Stanford last year that showed that teenagers and young adults who vape are at much higher risk of contracting COVID-19. That study was last August. We're now sort of 7 or 8 months from that time. And I'm wondering if that is what you have seen in your practice.
I haven't seen it personally in my practice, and that's largely because we haven't had a lot of kids, a lot of our specific patients with chronic respiratory illnesses have been doing really well with the isolation for COVID-19 and haven't been contracting it. The data, that study that you were talking about was a clinical study. There was actually some lab data to support what they were finding, in that exposure to nicotine increases the amount of the ACE2 protein on the surface of your lung. That's the receptor for COVID-19. It's how COVID-19 enters your body. So there is a sort of a mechanism to the clinical observation that was made in that paper.
We're joined now by Lance Bushy from the American Lung Association. Lance, thanks for joining us. And I wanted to know if you could talk to us about the trends in use now, maybe over the past decade and then over the last couple of years when it comes to vaping.
Sure. I mean, we are, thanks for having us, and apologies for the delay, but nationally in Maine, we still have a serious youth e-cigarette epidemic and a tobacco epidemic. Right now, nationally, close to 1 in 4 high school students are using at least one tobacco product, and e-cigarettes are the most common, with 1 in 5 high school kids using these. And our Maine rates, unfortunately, are higher, with 1 in 3 Maine high school students using some form of tobacco products and 30% of them using e-cigarettes. So we are continuing to see exponential growth of these products and use among high school and middle school students, setting them up for a serious addiction and a lifetime dependence of nicotine potentially.
I know that, Lance, last time we talked about this topic on Maine Calling, there were some bills making their way through the Maine legislature that had to do with vaping. And correct me if I'm wrong, I believe those were among the bills that sort of didn't get taken up because of the pandemic. And I'm wondering if that's true and what the status is of them now. Is there another movement to do some sort of regulation in Maine, further regulation of vaping products?
There is. And unfortunately, yes. I mean, obviously the pandemic put a stop to a lot of the work of the Maine legislature. But this year, as they are reconvening their work, we do have a comprehensive plan to address both vaping and e-cigarette use, but the tobacco epidemic that we have in our state. So we have really three policy priorities that we are addressing this session. One, we need to make sure that the tobacco control program is fully funded. The U.S. CDC recommends that Maine spends $15.9 million on a comprehensive cessation, treatment, education, comprehensive program to address tobacco. And we've gotten close, but we've fallen short of reaching that fully funded. So we are trying to increase funding for the Maine CDC's program. Additionally, we need to remove flavored tobacco products from the marketplace. We know kids follow the flavors. And by removing these attractive, kid-friendly flavors from the market, watermelon, gummy bear, and menthol, which kids use as well, taking these products off the shelves will go a long way in helping us to address youth tobacco use. And lastly, raising the price. We need to increase the tobacco tax in Maine. It has not been raised in 16 years. We used to have one of the highest tax rates in the Northeast and indeed the country, and now we've fallen to the second lowest in the Northeast. So we have a proposal to raise the Maine's tobacco tax to $4 a pack, and or all the corresponding tobacco products would see a price increase as well. And we know that that is one of the most effective policies to stop youth from using these products and encourage adults to make a quit attempt. So we are just seeing these proposals start to emerge through the process in the Maine legislature, and we are optimistic for a healthy dialogue and to see some policy action emerge in the months ahead.
We have a lot of calls and emails coming in. We'll start in Starks with Carol. Hi, Carol. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have about 30 years into tobacco prevention and control, first in Massachusetts there, and then with the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Maine. I retired in 2014, and now I've been spending the last couple of years on our local school board here in Farmington, the Mount Blue Regional School District. And I continue to be so alarmed by how slick the tobacco industry is at addicting our young. Lance and David have said some of what I might have said, but I lost a very dear friend of mine this year. I'm 76 years old. She was 73, and I know we're elders, but she started her tobacco use. She's African American in New York City when she was 14, and she tried to quit for many, many years. And one of her favorites was menthol. She moved on to vaping, and she died this year of lung cancer. It was a brief period of lung cancer, but it was very sad to lose her. Her children miss her. I miss her. The need for evidence-based tobacco prevention is very real for adults as well as youth. And those ideas of raising the tax hasn't been raised since 2005. Raising the tax is an evidence-based way because kids are extremely price sensitive.
Carol, thank you.
I don't know if you have any questions for me, but I really see it in my job now on the school board, and I worry about it. And so do the teachers and administrators in the district. It's a real concern. Vaping is dangerous, and it goes right to the brain.
Carol, I really appreciate you calling in and sharing your perspective, and I'm so sorry to hear about your friend. David, I'm going to reflect what Carol says. My kids are no longer in high school, but when they were talking always about how prevalent vaping was and how much they felt as though other parents and teachers didn't really understand how much of it was going on. It sounds like from what Carol has said that maybe that awareness has changed.
Yeah, I think it definitely has. You know, as time has gone on, we definitely knew that vaping was an issue, but some of the first places that we were hearing concerns shared with us were from the school systems, just because they were finding so many kids that were vaping in the bathroom or had devices, and it was just an issue figuring out on the school level how to deal with that. So I think there has been work that's been done with the schools. through the Maine Prevention Services Initiative. Some of that provides community-level support and district tobacco prevention providers that have worked with schools to help work on their policies related to smoking, to kind of expand them to make sure that they include these products. And there's also been a lot of different presentations and trainings, both for schools and for parents on the topic, just to help address some of the concerns that are seen at the community level and provide some tools to help work through this.
All right, Carol, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Farmington and Riley. Hi, Riley. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm 21 years old, and junior year of high school, I observed the rise of vaping among many of my friends. And when I went to college and the tobacco law grandfathered out many people at my age, they actually moved to cigarettes for a long time, and many of them still smoke cigarettes now. And I've also seen that England has actually embraced vaping as a method to try and get adult smokers, not children, from cigarettes to vaping in the hopes that they may quit. So I'm curious what you think the public health implications will be of focusing on vaping and how that relates to people moving to cigarettes.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call, Riley. Lance Bushy from the American Lung Association. I just read this morning about a study out of UC San Diego that said that young people who vape are three times more likely to smoke. On the other hand, I know that the industry has promoted vaping as a smoking cessation product. What is the information that you have from the American Lung Association?
Exactly. I mean, as you mentioned, we know that kids who utilize e-cigarettes are more likely to pick up other traditional tobacco combustible products. And the bottom line is the only thing that is safe for lungs is clean, healthy air. And the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has not approved any e-cigarette as a safe or effective method to help smokers quit. And until and unless the FDA does approve a e-cigarette as a safe and effective tool and cessation aid, the American Lung Association does not support their use for cessation and would encourage any adult tobacco user to use resources such as the Maine Tobacco Helpline or our program Freedom from Smoking that can indeed help you quit the tobacco addiction and is an approved and effective method.
Lance, before we go to a break, why don't you give me the number for the Maine Tobacco Helpline?
It is 1-800-207-1230.
Thank you so much. We are going to go to a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or send an email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Revision Energy, an employee-owned company now offering community solar farm shares to residents and businesses. Learn more at revisionenergy.com. And Lee Auto Malls, recognizing the County Teachers of the Year award winners in each Maine county all month long. Learn more at leeauto.com.
This Sunday is Election Day in Peru, and voting is compulsory. Peruvians are required to cast a ballot. But nearly a third of voters there plan to leave their ballots blank. Many believe the candidates are corrupt or involved in corruption. They say they're frustrated with the political and economic direction of their country, so they're voting for no one. Blank ballots in Peru, on the world.
Join us for the world this afternoon at 3. Did you know, in addition to being free over the air, Maine Public Television is now streaming live at mainepublic.org. You can enjoy all your favorite PBS and Maine Public Television programs and even discover new ones throughout the day. Check it out at mainepublic.org/mptv.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about vaping, otherwise known as e-cigarettes, the trends of use here in Maine and nationwide. Joining me, David Pierre with the Maine CDC Tobacco and Substance Use Prevention and Control Program, Dr. Colby Wyatt, pediatric pulmonologist at Maine Health, and Lance Bushy, who works on state public policy for the American Lung Association. You can share your comments or questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Matthew Myers, who is president of the organization Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. Thanks for calling in, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
What is Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids focusing on in terms of trying to reduce vaping among young people?
Well, you know, we see the issue of vaping and cigarette use as closely combined. The tobacco industry has proclaimed that vaping is a way to cut down on tobacco use, but the way they've marketed it in the United States is just the opposite, just as you've been hearing from your other speakers. What we have found in the United States is that the entire growth in use of nicotine products in the United States over the last several years is kids using flavored e-cigarettes. And when the tobacco industry said that they were removing many of the flavors that appealed to kids, what we found was, and we saw this in Maine, is a dramatic rise in the use of menthol-flavored e-cigarettes. We've also seen kids in Maine and others in Maine rapidly move to what are called these disposable-flavored products. So this has really been a bait and switch by the tobacco companies. They claim they introduced a product designed to reduce adult tobacco use, and the entire growth market has been among kids. We have more kids addicted to nicotine in the U.S. today and more sales of tobacco products in Maine to kids than we've had in 20 years.
What is happening with efforts to get the FDA to stop the use of flavored products?
Well, you know, it's a great question. The FDA has the power to clear the market of the very flavored products that have fueled the youth e-cigarette epidemic in Maine. It hasn't done that. When the Trump administration addressed this issue, it left on the market menthol e-cigarettes, and that's what kids are using, and it left on the market products that are called disposables, things like puff bars that come in all sorts of flavors. And in Maine in particular, when that switch happened, we saw a meteoric rise in sales of those very products. The term disposables is a misnomer. You know, a puff bar has as much nicotine as a full pack of cigarettes, and it had, you know, roughly 200 puffs. So the real key here is FDA is currently reviewing all of those flavored products. Our hope is that they won't authorize the continued sale of any of them. But even more important is Maine has the opportunity to do what Massachusetts and Rhode Island and New York have already done, which is to clear the market of those products. And then what it needs to do is raise the tax on all tobacco products so that what we do is not risk that the clampdown on e-cigarettes has a negative impact. We need to eliminate menthol cigarettes. We need to eliminate all flavored e-cigarettes. And we need to raise the tax on all tobacco products.
Matt, if it's okay with you, I'm going to go to one of our callers because I believe he's got a question about exactly what we're talking about right now. Gino in Brunswick, go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And I've been in this battle since the mid-1980s, and we made a lot of progress. But in the last 5 years, so much of that has been undone by the vaping. So I'm wondering if the folks on the panel could talk a little bit about how we prioritize strategically on how to prevent the next generation from being addicted to not only the nicotine products, but they're an incredible gateway to other more addictive substances as well. And it's such a big, big issue. So I know it's hard, but if there's a way to be more specific about what do we do in schools, do we put our energy into legislative things. Could you guys speak to that, please? And I appreciate all the work that everybody's doing. It's a big issue.
Sure. Matt, and since we have you on the phone for just a couple minutes, I'll start with you. Gino's asking about priorities. Obviously, Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids has prioritized this fight against the flavored vaporizers, flavored e-cigarettes that are being targeted at kids.
Well, you know, we have solutions, and they're part legislative and they are part in the community. But what we have to help is our educators. We need to clear the market of all flavored e-cigarettes and menthol cigarettes, not one or the other, but both of those. Top priority. We need to raise the tax on products because we know that reduces tobacco use. Only when we do that will we succeed in helping our educators and moms and dads in the schoolrooms convince our kids that they should not be duped again as the Marlboro Man and Joe Camel did decades before. The fact that flavored products and menthol cigarettes taste good doesn't mean that they're harmless. Menthol cigarettes are used by half of all kids who smoke, and menthol cigarettes are one of the reasons we continue to have such heavy deaths from tobacco use across the board. Flavored e-cigarettes are the reason a new generation is getting hooked. We have time to reverse that epidemic, but we have to do it now.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for calling in. That was Matthew Myers, who is president of Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. And Gino, thank you for your question as well. I'll put it to Lance Bushy as well. And I do want to note that we have reached out to several vape shops, hoping one will call in and join this conversation and talk about their perspective. So not sure if that's going to happen, but we have made that attempt. But Lance, our caller, Gino, was asking about priorities and how do you prioritize where your efforts are at the American Lung Association.
Well, Gino was right in his summary of we have done this before. I mean, Maine had some of the highest combustible use rates among teens in the late 90s, and we invested in the tobacco program at Maine CDC. We raised the tax, and we saw our rates drop dramatically among traditional products. However, when e-cigarettes came online was the same time that the previous gubernatorial administration was cutting the tobacco program, and we did not have that same aggressive approach. So we need to do the things Matt mentioned. We need education and awareness. The Lung Association this fall launched Get Your Head Out of the Cloud, which is a campaign to educate parents about the dangers. Because as much as we've talked about this, and I appreciate you always bringing this show on the air, parents still are unaware about the rapid increase in use among high school and middle school students about these products. So this Get the Head Out of Your Cloud campaign targets parents of 10 and 14-year-olds to start the conversation now. And then we got to prioritize those policy solutions that Matt mentioned. Raising the tax, increasing this price. We know youth are price sensitive, but it also helps adults who are addicted make a quit attempt. And removing flavored tobacco products from the market is key to making sure that we do not set our current kids up for a lifetime of nicotine addiction. So education and the policy priorities of removing flavors from the market, increasing the price of products through taxation, and fully funding the Maine CDC tobacco program to have a robust campaign to help current smokers quit and educate youth about the dangers of these products are the key priorities.
We have a tweet here from Liam, and I'm going to send this one to you, Dr. Wyatt. Liam asks, is drug therapy an effective option for smoking cessation in youth, or is behavioral approach the best option?
By drug therapy, I think he's referring to there are a couple of medications.
I'm going to guess the patch or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say nicotine replacement. With youth, we try to do more behavior modification therapy. A lot of youth don't want to listen to what we say, right? as parents, and it's no different when you're their doctor. You try to get on a page with them without their parents in the room and really do some behavioral counseling. I found that some of the main tobacco quit programs are helpful for teens, especially with the vaping. The teens that have been hooked on vaping that want to quit and that are having trouble quitting have found some success using those programs. So,
all right. And here's a related email from Bruce. Are there any social strategies that have been developed to discourage vaping in children? Have there been any studies that approach the issue from a psychological perspective rather than a legal perspective? David, I'll send that one to you.
Well, I think we've tried to address some of the social pieces with some of the work that we've done in a couple different ways. One, we've had educational campaigns that have been going on for a little bit with youth anti-vaping campaign, really targeting youth to help educate them on the facts and risks, but also try to help those who may already be addicted and need to quit and set up that in a way, in addition to the main quit link, which people can get through 1-800-QUIT-NOW. There's also a text option through that youth anti-vaping campaign where youth can text Maine to 88709 and get tips and kind of feedback on how to quit. So a lot of that campaign does kind of focus on some of the social pieces of vaping and some of the things that youth are going through and helping make them more aware and help them quit. There's also other initiatives such as the Sidekicks program, which is a training for youth and adult advisors that kind of helps teach youth how to work with their peers that might vape and want to quit or just kind of help provide guidance when they might be having some different health or different issues that they're trying to work through and having youth that are trained to help their peers through that process and connect them with different resources. So I think those are some of the key social pieces that are being worked on.
I'm going to go to Jill, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Jill. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much. So I'm a former co-chair of Pride Portland, and being involved in organizing Pride events for a number of years, I know that the tobacco industry and the vaping industry targets the LGBT community with free product giveaways at Pride events and really has made smoking and vaping a part of our culture. So I'd love to hear more about how the industry is targeting youth in marginalized communities and if there are clear-cut health impacts on our health and well-being as a result.
Lance, is that a question for you?
Sure. The tobacco industry has a long and lethal history of targeting kids and disparate communities with flavored products, and their marketing has been effective. 8 out of 10 African-American adults who smoke use menthol cigarettes, and you can see the historical ads for cool cigarettes and whatnot targeting African-American communities, and they're doing the same thing today with e-cigarettes. The same thing for LGBTQ youth. They're nearly twice as likely to use tobacco products, and they are using flavored products at an alarming rate. And the industry knows this. They steer their marketing dollars towards this by sponsoring events or ads in publications geared towards these communities. And the results are alarming and concerning, and that is one of the reasons why we need to address flavors and take them off the market.
Mm. Jill, why do you think it is? Why do you think that these youth in particular are targeted?
I'm not sure. I think maybe because, you know, it's a way to target a specific community in an easy and fun way. I mean, literally at Pride events, packs of cigarettes are given out and vaping products are given out for free. And then they get the contact information of those people who are of age, you know, they're of legal age. But, you know, they get that contact information and then can target them further. And it's just always been really concerning to me. And I, as a lesbian adult, I have a lot of friends who smoke. And it's definitely become part of our culture. And it's just very concerning to me, the targeting that's happening, especially to our youth.
Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing that perspective, Jill, calling from South Portland. If you have a question or a comment about vaping and tobacco control, please call in 1-800-399-3566. You can send a quick email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Ocean View at Falmouth, an active retirement living campus proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow on Maine Public Classical. And Down East Acadia, your neighborhood playground for discovery and adventure. Come play for the day or stay for a while. More at truemaine.net.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. President Biden's infrastructure plan calls for $174 billion to rev up the market for electric vehicles. Automakers hope that money will help them turn a niche product into the next big thing.
All the car companies have been asking for in the American market is a direction to run in, and now they have one.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Here and Now coming up at noon following Maine Calling. Spring cleaning doesn't just happen, especially when it comes to unneeded cars and trucks that we've been sitting in our driveway since last spring. From now until the end of May, when you donate a vehicle to Maine Public, we'll send you a custom Maine Public Radio car cleaning sponge and a can of premium car wax for your current ride. Learn more and get things rolling at mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about vaping, otherwise known as e-cigarettes. Our guests are David Pie with the Maine CDC Tobacco and Substance Use Prevention and Control Program, Dr. Colby Wyatt, pediatric pulmonologist at Maine Health, and Lance Bushy, who works on state public policy for the American Lung Association. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Dr. Wyatt, what is the link between vaping and cancer?
Well, I don't know that there's a direct link other than what's contained in the vaping devices. You know, when people are inhaling vaping devices, they're inhaling a lot of things that are not meant to be in your lungs, including flavoring products that are marketed as safe for human consumption, but that means ingestion, not inhalation. The nicotine itself can cause a lot of cardiovascular issues, but the substances that are in the vape products other than nicotine have sort of uncertain long-term effects on the lungs. Vape products haven't been on the market long enough for us to know what's going to happen in 20 years from inhaling vegetable glycerin into your lungs or flavorings or even some of the heavy metals that are in vape products at lower levels than what are in a combustible cigarette, but they're still there. And we don't know that those lower levels are safe over the long term.
So. All right. We're going to go to Rachel calling from Portland. I think, hey, Rachel, your comment relates to what Dr. Colby Wyatt was just talking about.
Okay, so unfortunately, I couldn't hear what he was talking about because I was talking to the receptionist.
Oh, okay. We're talking about some of the other compounds that can be in the liquid in vaping devices.
Yes, so it's not just the compounds that are in them, it's the health effects that occur, which is, you know, I know that the focus for nicotine addiction is, you know, is lung cancer. Am I still on?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry. I couldn't tell. The focus has been, you know, long-term addiction to nicotine and lung cancer, but there are other really terrible effects, physiological effects that can take place from vaping, including things like popcorn lung, which are, you know, actually have higher rates of fatality in some cases, and which take place much sooner in a person's life than, you know, the risk of lung cancer in the long term. And I know I know Lance Bushy as a member of, I'm a past member of the American Lung Association board, and I know he can speak to that.
Sure. And also I want to ask Dr. Wyatt if you can tell us what popcorn lung is.
Yeah, I'll talk about that. It's a great point that you're making, that there are other health effects other than lung cancer. So popcorn lung is formerly known as bronchiolitis obliterans. And it's a scarring of the smaller airways of your lungs to the point where air can't pass through them anymore. It's called popcorn lung because there was an outbreak of this bronchiolitis obliterans in a popcorn factory because of the exposure to the butter flavoring in the popcorn factory. There have been subsequent outbreaks of bronchiolitis obliterans in food flavoring factories for flavored coffee from the flavors that are added to coffee. So the workers at those factories were inhaling the flavorings and getting bronchiolitis obliterans, commonly known as popcorn lung. Those food flavorings are not the same flavorings that no one's inhaling butter flavored vape devices, but it raises the point that all of these flavorings are chemical compounds that are not studied for the safety of inhalation. They're studied for the safety of ingestion, and it adds another risk to vaping. I think the unspoken sort of danger of vaping in youth is we went from approximately 5,000 youth nicotine users prior to the vaping pandemic or epidemic, through the efforts of youth smoking cessation. We went from 5,000 youth nicotine users to over 30,000 now in the state of Maine. of youth nicotine users, and those are daily users. The effects of nicotine on your body are not benign. You know, the mental health effects that schools are seeing from kids going through nicotine withdrawal and being unable to concentrate, or for anxiety about through nicotine withdrawal, they're all very real and very immediate impact on these children and their ability to perform their daily tasks and to go through learning, or even to live a substance-free life, which they should aspire to.
Rachel, thank you for your call. We're going to go to a voicemail that came in before the program.
I have a question regarding the difference between marijuana vapes and nicotine vapes. What public health consequences does that have? Thank you.
All right, David?
Well, there's a lot of folks that end up using both type of vape products, and there are differences, obviously, in what they're inhaling with those, and both have negative health consequences. I'm not sure if there's a more specific point the person was looking for in their question.
Is this Lance? Go ahead.
This is Colby Wyatt again. Back in 2019, we had the sort of vaping epidemic happening, and we had these situations of vaping-associated lung injury that were going on. We didn't know where they were coming from. And these were young people being admitted to the hospital in respiratory failure, needing oxygen or ventilator support, and there was even a case on the national news about somebody needing a lung transplant. Those were associated with vaping of marijuana devices, and actually the vitamin E oils that are associated with the marijuana devices. The vaping of marijuana products versus mass-produced nicotine products are a little different in the devices they use and how they're delivered and what's contained in them. I admit that might get to some of what that caller was asking about. But.
All right, we're going to go to Jennifer, who's calling from Winthrop. Hi, Jennifer, go ahead.
Hi, I work in the field of addiction, and I was just curious if anybody knows if there's any work going on around addiction and vaping in young people, and how we might, I know it's a big Rubik's Cube with a lot of different sides, but how we might be able to attack it from that direction. Many think that nicotine is another gateway drug to other more serious substance use disorder, but I see nicotine as one of the most serious. Is there any work in that area?
Dr. Wyatt, I'll send this to you.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any active work with sort of approaching it from an addiction standpoint, other than the tools that are being used through the youth nicotine addiction and vaping lines, the tools that the state has in place. You're correct in that it does set up a risk-reward pathway in youth brains. The nicotine receptors in youth brains are more plastic, and it's developing risk-reward pathways. Unlike an adult that were to pick up a nicotine device, they would not have the same sort of remodeling of the pathways that youth have to the extent that youth have. It's one of the reasons that the majority of adult smokers who are continuing smokers started in their teens. And it's actually something that's known by tobacco companies and something that was targeted. That came out in the early court case that led to the state tobacco settlement. The youth brain is acutely sensitive to nicotine and the effects of nicotine, risk, reward, and also addiction. And that sets up other addiction pathways that can lead to other substance uses later in life. It's one of the reasons that there was such an effort put forward to stopping youth nicotine usage through stopping smoking cessation. And it's also one of the real tragedies of the new youth nicotine addiction that's happening through vaping.
Jennifer, thank you for your call. David, I was wondering if you could give some advice to parents who don't really know what to look for. These devices are very small, correct? Very easy to hide. What might be some indication that your child, your teenager, is vaping?
Well, there is more information that parents can learn as far as, you know, what is out there. what vaping products look like, different conversation ideas that they can have with their kids. In addition to the youth vaping campaign that I mentioned earlier, we kind of have a sister campaign that goes with that that's focused on parents and looking at some of the data of the youth data of what they report their the numbers are for the youth that vape. And then there's a survey that looks at parents and how many youth they feel vape, and those numbers just don't align. So there's an awareness piece obviously missing for parents. So the parent campaign kind of gets to that, trying to make them aware of the different products and the conversations that they can have with their kids to try to learn more or advice they can give if they are using vape products. So that campaign is out there. There's also a Live Vape Free, which is an online course that parents can check out anytime and kind of do it at their own pace. And it also has a conversation guide available. And so there's more about that on mainquitlink.com, vaping quit support. And it's a good resource. Both of those are good resources to help make parents more aware of the vaping that could be happening with the teen.
Sure. And we'll provide links to those. And thank you for mentioning them, David. I guess I'm asking for a real simple, and maybe there is not a simple answer here. For example, if your child is smoking cigarettes, you can probably smell smoke on their clothing and in their hair. Is there anything equivalent to that to be able to tell if your child is using e-cigarettes?
Not really equivalent. Sometimes if it's a flavored product, there is a smell, but it might be like a fruit smell. So it's not quite as easy to identify, and it also doesn't stick around as long as the smell of a traditional tobacco product might. But that's one thing to look for. Quite often, vaping is also done in groups, you know, so if they're hanging out or going outside or going places away from the parents sort of on a regular basis, you know, that could be something that could also be a red flag.
We'll go to George, who's calling from Freiburg. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm listening to the fellow or a couple of people they want to raise the tax on cigarettes by a dollar. I'm 68 years old. I started smoking when I was 14. At all kinds of influence from the media and the TV, and everybody smoked on TV, and nobody talked about it being so terrible. And it got hooked. And I've tried to quit a number of times. I was successful once for 6 years and actually went back at it again. It's psychological as well as physical. Anyhow, I feel like I should be grandfathered in and have a designation on my card or whatever that I don't have to pay that extra tax. I'm paying too much tax now. I pay $3 a pack. I smoke one pack a day, every day, have had for 56 years.
George, you're not the only one who feels that way. We also have an email who someone says, everyone knows nicotine addiction is incredibly difficult to break, but is taxing these products actually a solution, or can it be seen as another method for punishing folks struggling with an addiction, especially those in a lower socioeconomic situation? Lance.
Yeah, unfortunately, the tax is one of the most effective strategies, but tobacco use costs Maine $811 million directly attributable to smoke, and either in lost work productivity or medical costs. The state of Maine Medicaid budget is impacted by $262 million. So there is a cost beyond just the tax that a user pays. So they are paying with high healthcare costs and the burden of lung disease that they get from smoking. So we strongly believe that increasing the tax is a smart policy to implement, both to stop youth from initiation, but help those who are addicted quit. Every time that we have raised the tax in the past, which has been too long in Maine, but across the country, we see an increase in volume to quit lines. And the Maine Tobacco Helpline is a phenomenal resource. And again, 1-800-207-1230. Encourage anyone who's currently addicted to tobacco to call now, because we always say never quit trying to quit. It takes people a number of times to make a quit attempt to be successful, and raising the tax will help more people on that quit journey.
George, I really appreciate you calling and sharing your perspective. George calling from Freiburg. Dr. Wyatt, before George's call, we were talking, I had asked, how can parents tell? And there are some symptoms associated with vaping. Tell us about those.
Yes. So the symptoms that you would pick on up from vaping isn't actually the usage, but with the withdrawal from nicotine. And that's what most people will notice. Increased agitation, difficulty with sleep. So people vaping in the evening may have sleep disorders, and we've seen quite a bit of that. People having trouble going to sleep when we discover that they're actually vaping and their nicotine usage is keeping them from being able to fall asleep. So it's subtle, and because teens want to stay up late and may be a little irritable with their parents, but if it's something that's a worsening of that, a worsening of sleep, or agitation during the day, anxiety about certain, or more anxiety than the kids usually have, then that can be a sign of nicotine usage. And I would just encourage just talking to kids about it, just being super frank and super honest. It's not accusatory, but just talking about vape usage, introducing it by recognizing how prevalent it is and that kids are struggling with it. Other kids are struggling with it, and giving kids an opportunity to recognize that they're struggling with it as well, rather than accusing them of doing it. But
And Dr. Wyatt, it's so interesting to hear you say, don't accuse the kids. So here's a tweet from Mary Lou. My son became addicted to vaping and nicotine in high school. As his parents, we did not know where to go or how to help him. Schools were punishing these kids instead of realizing it's an addiction to the nicotine. If you ask any kid why they vape, it's because it tastes good. And then an email here, while all the various suggestions on how to help someone quit smoking sound good on paper, in reality, it doesn't work. She tells a story that her husband was a lifelong smoker. The increasing price did not stop. He eventually developed COPD and died. And she says, this needs to be treated as we treat those addicted to other drugs. We need rehab location. So two voices to end this program. I so appreciate our guests here today on the program. The voice you just heard, Dr. Colby Wyatt, a pediatric pulmonologist with Maine Health. Also with us, Lane Bushy, Senior Division Director for State Public Policy with the American Lung Association, and David P.A., Communications and Policy Manager for the Tobacco and Substance Use Prevention and Control Program at the Maine CDC. Today's sound engineer was John Keimel. Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith produced the program. Today we had help from Sam Moran. This program will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandreau. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.